Messy, messy, messy.
He just moved in yesterday, and I didn't have any time to clean up or to unpack or just to do anything.
Don't apologize. I like messy.
You do?
Mm-hmm. It gives a slob like me a good feeling. I mean, your kitchen doesn't come up to mine. I still take the prize for messiness.
I never imagined Dr. Harper married to...
To a slob?
Oh, no, no. Well, yes.
Met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P. Brain.
He's a closet.
Don't hurt me, please.
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman.
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer.
I already can't believe that you got 4 pages of notes.
Oh, God.
Out of this movie.
God, help me. I'm going to count it off here. Hello, and welcome to Hello, This is the Doomed Show. In case I sound very prepared, it's because I am excited to make use of these 4 pages of useless notes I've taken on the following film. But more important than paper is Jeffrey. Hello, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I also took... Well, see, I took 4.5 pages of notes, so I win.
It's not a competition. It's not a competition.
Well, maybe it is, though, and I won. I just copy-pasted walks down hallway, walks up staircase, and I got a lot of real estate out of that.
Yeah, my hand was getting tired from taking notes, because I still write on paper, because I'm a cool dude. Folks, we are back to attempt another... we'll see how many we do this year. Another... grouping, I won't say a gathering or a murder,
gaggle.
A gaggle mm-hmm. or a murder of shot on video horror films like we did last year. But this one jumped out at me a while ago, and unfortunately, it jumped back into my brain as we were discussing SOV horror for this summer once again.
Yeah, this one is, I'd never heard of this movie, so this is a you pick.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, I'm taking full responsibility, not trying to volley the blame. What we're talking about is Night of Terror from 1986, aka Escape from the Insane Asylum. And I'm confused because I found this on YouTube. For some reason on YouTube, there's an 1-hour-and-45-minute version, which we are not talking about tonight. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the 1.5-hour version, which I sort of found what I thought was a massacre video release of this online, but then there's no trace of this actually getting a real release anywhere that I can find.
Curious.
Yeah.
Again, I've never even heard of it, despite being familiar with the filmic contributions of its creators in other films.
Yes.
This one has totally escaped my notice until you brought it up. I think that's a shame in some ways.
Yeah.
Because this is a wild one.
Yeah, this is bonkers. We're talking about Renee Harmon. Renee Harmon is an actress / multiple other duties. I fear that she may have done the makeup on people in this movie because everyone has her blush. I was dying with this freaking makeup job here. But yeah, she's a writer, producer, and I thought she directed something, but I don't see any directing credits. But she definitely was all about Frozen, Scream, which is a film I love.
Yeah.
Very much. But this, at the outset, feels like a secret sequel to Frozen Scream, because sure enough, Rene Harmon is back in this movie in a leading role, and they're using clips of a 11-year younger herself in clips from Frozen Scream, and they're totally not connected at all.
No, not even in the
just
slightest.
Just filler.
And not even a significant amount of filler, which is the really weird thing to me, because this is more or less a full, complete film.
Exactly.
That they just put about 2 minutes of Frozen Scream into.
I got really worried when I started this, because I don't know if you know this, but I hate clip show movies, especially if it's a movie I would rather be watching, like Frozen Scream. I did not want to see clips from it. And then they abandoned them completely after like 10 or 15 minutes.
Very strange, especially because, it does not fit in any way. I mean, on the very granular level of film stock, because, of course, this is a shot on video film, and Frozen Scream was not.
No.
It doesn't match. It doesn't fit. There's no coherent reason for it. So, yeah, great. I mean, if I have a complaint, it's either that the movie either did included that stuff at all, which it probably shouldn't have. Or that it didn't do more of it. Like, if it just did more of it and, like, the entire movie Frozen Scream shows up in here in one form or another, that would be preferable in some ways to what they do.
Yeah, I want to find a trailer for this thing, but sure enough, no.
No.
There's no trailer for this. But instead, I'm going to play a little piece of music from a little band in this movie. And they're called The Ins and Outs. So, Here's a little clip from this band, Ins and Outs, for you to get you hyped about this movie, which maybe you can find if you look on VHS. I mean, YouTube VHS? Whatever. Go find this movie on your own, people. You can do it.
To admit, I do love this band and their music. It's like pinnacle new wave. I missed their name, so I was just referring to them as Simpler Minds.
I was gonna say lead singer looks kind of like a young Frank Black from the Pixies. Slightly different singing style, of course.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, boy. But I did manage to find what I think is a promotional poster from this production company. They're Video Pictures. And here's what it says on this promotional poster, which is gorgeous. It says, "They killed her, but she refused to stay dead. When you're on the cutting edge of brain research, things are bound to go wrong. Can the teenagers, the psychic, the nurse, the doctors, the patients, the party guests, the rock band, and the street people all survive this haunted night of terror? Probably not many. Can they?" Oh, my God.
I would say a surprising number of them actually do survive.
Yes. Absolutely they do.
I would also say that some of those, like the rock band, not terribly involved in the proceedings. But that's actually a pretty good summation of the film and all of the myriad avenues of inquiry that this explores. There's a lot going on here, to say the least.
There's a .com on this poster for www.videopicturescorp.com, and I have just typed it in, and I'm going to hit enter now. So folks, if this show ends here, it's because I have been kidnapped by my new Russian bride satellites.
Well, videopictures.com actually redirects to fear.com, so.
Oh, well, Video Pictures Corp.
Okay.
Yeah, and it says it's one of those awesome server not found sites. So not so much information.
They found you, but you didn't find them.
Well, this opens up with some piano music and some various images that come flashing on the screen, including a hooded man who looks vaguely like the Zodiac Killer standing in a window.
Yes, yes.
And some other strange flashes that, you know, we don't really get a chance to get anything as we see our very simple video pictures corp. Presents Night of Terror or Escape from the Insane Asylum.
Neither of which are good titles, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, Night of Terror just reminds me of Night of Horror. Night of Horror is the one that had the really scary stretchy neck zombie on the cover that apparently is really, really rough, like really bad movie.
My problem with it is that it's just so generic that I immediately forget it every time. It was hard for me to find this movie on my hard drive because I kept forgetting what it was called.
Yes.
And Escape from the Insane Asylum, I guess, does technically happen, but pretty early, and it's not that important.
And it sounds like Escape from a Women's Prison, which is also a movie, yes. And the artwork is similar for both, so I don't know what they were going for there. Tricking people into renting them is what the goal was. So we have two lovers. We have Inez, a beautiful blonde lady whose hair is teased out several feet from her ears.
She has what I would describe as Beauty and the Beast hair, except she's Beast.
But she's being romanced by Alex. Alex, played by Henry Lewis, Huey's father.
Yes, Dr. Huey Lewis's father, Dr. Alex. Yeah.
Doctor, give me the news. I've got a bad case of loving you. That's a Huey Lewis song. Don't look it up.
Sports.
So,
American Psycho reference.
He's explaining to Inez that he can't divorce his wife, Chris, who we'll meet very shortly, because there's too much at stake. And I wrote in my notes, there's the number two, much at stake, STEAK, because I'm very clever.
Well, and the S is actually subbed out for a money sign.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's why he can't. We'll find out that it's because she had got money.
Yeah. She's gonna be funding some research, and we're gonna see all kinds of research happening.
You know what they say, women be funding.
That's weird though, because I give Lietta my paycheck, so I don't really know. I be funding too.
Doesn't count.
As I'll explain later, I don't like fund it icing or fond it, which sort of sounds like fundin.
I believe it's pronounced fondant.
Fondant. So as she's telling him, oh, you can't break up with me because I have some very important facts about you that Chris would want to know. So she's almost trying to blackmail him, but then a hooded man approaches. And when she sees him, he tries to calm her down. And when that doesn't work, he whips out his little needle.
The hypodermic.
And gives her a shot, and she's out of there.
Okay, so a lot of things here in this scene really draw my attention. First up, the fact that this is like their makeout place. It is is this the McFarland farmhouse?
I bet it is. I bet it
probably
is.
Right? I mean, yep. It's hard to say because it's all very dark, but it's just covered in cobwebs, and this is where they choose to go and mac out / murder each other. He does some weird courtship thing, like they're kissing, but he also is just like stroking her lips.
Yes, like you do.
Like you do. It's very sort of like a John Travolta out of Face Off type move. Yeah. And the other really weird thing here, besides the fact that, you know, before her death, she's just staring at the Zodiac Killer, who does nothing, by the way. He's just there as a distraction, I guess.
He likes to do that in this movie.
Yeah. I like to watch.
Oh, bless his heart.
She's wearing what I can only describe as a wedding dress.
Yes. I thought it was their wedding night when this movie started.
Yeah, no, not quite. Not quite. The deading night.
We cut to our title credits here, scrolling or just flying at the screen amazingly over the who I call Nurse Wrench. She's not quite a Nurse Ratchet. But she's walking around what I call the hotel hospital, because this hospital or medical facility just looks like a shitty old hotel to me. but she's walking along, and we find out that this is written and produced by the aforementioned Renee Harmon, a German actress who, the first thing she did when she came to the United States, aside from, you know, getting into filmmaking, is she dropped her accent cold, became one yep, of the most American-sounding people ever.
I mean, I hate to make this comparison, but she is sort of like a Tommy Wiseau type figure, like both in her ambition and in her very distinctive vocal delivery. She's a treasure.
Yeah, I gotta say, she is just a wonder to behold. Her acting in this is just grand, just grand.
I mean, this is, having seen several other Renee Harmon pictures, this is actually one of her better performances. Oh, like wow. It's very staid in comparison to some of the others, like Lady Street Fighter, where she is like, she is. So, you know, that scene in Nightmare on Elm Street where Nancy's talking on the phone and Freddy's tongue comes through the phone?
Yes.
She does that with her tongue to a phone in that movie. It's disturbing. Let's wow. Say. So, yeah, this is a much more restrained performance from her.
Nice, because I've seen her in The Executioner Part 2, and I've seen her in... I can never remember if I've seen Lady Street Fighter or Sister Street Fighter. Sister Street Fighter is the Hong Kong Kung Fu movie.
Yeah, Lady Street Fighter is not Hong Kong.
Okay. Weirdly enough, folks at home who know my obsession with softcore pornography... You know, I've seen Cinderella 2000 because a company sent me the DVD to renew, and I was like really enjoying the movie until it got really creepy and sad.
I love Cinderella 2000. It's a great movie.
It has a creepy and sad part that made me feel bad inside. But
yeah.
Other than that, she's in that. She's in that. That's important.
Really?
Yeah. She plays the widow.
I did not know that.
Yeah, name to look for.
I guess so.
So we get a clip from Frozen Scream, and I wrote in my notes, I'm not writing this shit down, Jeffrey. Screw you, buddy. No, I actually did not write them down to spare us a 3-hour episode on this frickin' movie.
Yeah, it also doesn't matter.
Yeah, totally.
Again, you can just close your eyes and take like a micro nap.
Oh, dude, I love micro naps.
Yeah, me too. It's the only way to escape Freddy.
Dude, I've taken 4 since we started tonight. This is great. Then we get to meet Paul. Paul is a patient. He's comatose in this hospital, even though he's awake.
Yeah, he seems very much like he's mirroring his performance on Patrick. So this is like a Paul Still Lives type scenario. Just, you know, staring blankly up in the screen. For some reason, I don't know why, but when they first introduced him, I thought his name was Tom, so I kept referring to him as Tom in my notes. But yeah, it's definitely Paul.
Now, Paul is such a Tom, though. Oh my God.
Paul, Dick, and Tom, right?
Exactly. Then we get a sensitive portrayal of the mentally ill, as we're in this mental hospital, and we got all kinds of crazy characters interacting with each other. You have a lady who looks like a bald, like... mystical woman of some kind.
Wait. I thought this was a board game club.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you join a board game club and realized, oh no, I'm in an asylum accident?
Oh no. This is always happening to me.
Why does this keep crappening to me?
My favorite of all these characters, of course, is Santa Claus, who's being accused of cheating at chess with his partner. And I just, oh my God, it was so beautiful.
You should pipe in his great delivery of, I did not.
Oh, yes. I will probably be dropping some very beautiful sound bites from this movie because there's a lot of great stuff in this. If you can, honestly, folks, the first 15 minutes of this movie are the worst part of, like, for podcasters. Trying yes. to take notes on this shit is crazy, and I was determined to not let it affect my enjoyment of this film. I may not be able to affect your enjoyment, but Renee Harmon, who plays Chris, she's having a little chit chat with her lawyer because she believes that she's no longer belonging to this gaggle of insane people. She wants to get out, but he is very explicit in explaining that her doctor, Dr. Harper, Dr. Seymour Harper, I love the name Seymour in a movie, and he says that she's not ready to get out.
Have we established that Chris is also the other doctor's wife?
Yes. So Dr. Harper is, yeah. Dr. Harper is partnering with Dr. Nilsson. Dr. Nilsson. Alex is our gentleman at the very beginning of the movie who, you know, they didn't want to reveal he was the bad guy too soon. So they waited approximately 1 minute to reveal that he's a villainous character. But yes, he's partnered with Alex, her husband. And they both believe that she should stay in this insane asylum because her the inheritance that she's, or her just her money, the vague corporation that she seems to run, is funding their quote-unquote research.
Yes. Their extreme brain research, where they are trying to cure retardation.
Yes.
That's their goal. Pure science fiction, if you ask me, like landing a man on the moon.
That reminds me of this quote coming up. Money is the root of all research. Yep.
Yeah, great. their goal is very unclear. Like, why are they trying? I guess, like, they just want to make money.
Yeah, they have this experimental procedure, but they're villains because, of course, they're using human subjects in order to test this stuff, which always involves lobotomies for some reason.
At one point, they call them like a run of the mill lobotomy or something. It was so funny.
They're probably just like psychological sadists or something. I don't know.
Mm.
Dr. Harper is confronted by Paul's mother, Celeste. Now, I really wasn't expecting this lady to be a major character, but she is a psychic who's Paul's mother, and she's very worried about her son, who's in this quote-unquote comatose state, and she'll be back many, many times. But Paul is just like laughs at her accusations and then has her physically removed from the building.
Celeste is great. She's like everybody's Jewish and or Italian fortune-telling aunt.
Everybody. Yeah, yep. Everybody's got everybody's. One.
Yep.
When Chris is kind of like just hanging out after failing to convince her lawyer to get her out of there, she meets a guy who tells her about, he's the model builder guy. He's sitting there with glue and like a wooden airplane or something. He's failing to build it. And he calls her over and he tells her about this murder that he witnessed. And they immediately cut to another clip from Frozen screen. She has nothing to do with anything. So then next thing you know, Paul, he murders a male nurse. He gets out of his comatose state and freaking murders a guy. Then he's out of there. He's escaped.
I mean, he just got a little excited. That's pretty much what he tells his mother later on. Like, you know, these things happen.
The strange editing of this movie happens here where Dr. Alex and Dr. Seymour Harper, they hear about this escape. They've heard that freaking Paul has escaped. And then they show them finding the body of the dead male nurse as though the discovery of the body wasn't the way they knew that he'd escaped. It was very strange. So we're going to have another moment later in this movie where it is really obvious that they had a different order of events in mind. And the editor said, I can fix this just to keep things exciting, if not wildly confusing. Now we have Chris giving herself a pep talk in the mirror. Chris has image issues. She has a fear of aging, and she will confess about why this fear of aging kind of led her down the path that she's been on since she married Dr. Alex. She pulls what is that movie? Wild at Heart.
Ooh.
Where she's talking at herself in the mirror, and then she's adjusting her makeup and starts to smear lipstick on her cheeks, which barely shows up because of all the rouge that is already on her cheeks. And she's screaming, and man, her like getting wild is so fun. I love this part. It's very
this
subtle.
This is when she becomes Joker-fied.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to shoot Robert De Niro.
Well, she sees her first ghostly apparition during this scene. As Inez with her windswept beast mane flowing behind her pops up in the mirror and just sort of floats.
My favorite thing about this is they had one shot of this actress with the fan blowing and her like wispy gothic look to her, and she has this look on her face that has no emotion. She looks like one of the post-lobotomy people. She's just just kind of staring, and they reuse that over and over again. Even when she's supposed to be speaking to Chris from beyond the grave, she's always just got this same look on her face. It's wonderful.
Yep.
They release Chris into the wild. They for some reason, they have to declare her sane before they can declare her insane again and then do the experimental procedure, which is the run-of-the-mill lobotomy?
I think it's routine. Routine lobotomy. Yeah. It's a convoluted plan, let's say the least. God,
it's so good.
But I love that. I love the idea of them taking one look at her with like the lipstick all over her face. And they're like, oh, looks like you're cured. She's you're ready to be released.
So her stepdaughter, Becky, shows up. And what I love about Becky is that she, among a lot of other people in this movie, seemed to know more about the outside world, and especially Inez. Everybody knew about Dr. Alex and Inez, about their affair. Literally everyone. And everyone has the same restraint with spilling the beans, which is none.
I love later on when somebody's like, wow, we really thought Alex was a bachelor.
Oh my God. That's such a horrible thing to say to somebody. Oh my God. So when Becky shows up, her and Chris start jumping for joy, packing her suitcase like and going, freedom, freedom. And so she gets her out of the frickin' the home and to take her to her home, and which is, you know, we'll get to that. Oh, my God, I'm excited about that. But meanwhile, Paul, our ineffectual murderer here, he is now in a black jumpsuit. he looks like a character from V, if the characters from V were all wearing black instead of red. And he's trying to hitchhike unsuccessfully.
Yeah, the black jumpsuit has like some weird stitching on it that makes it look, or like maybe even padding that just makes it look otherworldly.
Maybe like a motorcycle. It's either a motorcycle outfit or something you wear when you've joined a cult who's going to like send you off to space or something.
I think it's what you wear under your Power Rangers armor.
What do you mean if? You mean when, bro? I don't. You didn't say if. Never mind. Forget it. Oh boy. He's actually following Chris and Becky around town, and that's going to be really important later. Maybe in the sequel, if this had one. they meet Paul's mom at a shop. So they're in this weird place in California that looks like a rustic kind of hippie town, but like gentrified. You know what I mean?
Well, the shop advertises outside woodcraft and bric-a-brac.
Oh my God, all the bric-a-brac is in this movie. Oh, it's so good. But they meet her, and she mentions something about their future. Like, don't go to the house. Don't.
Well, she says to them, I know things. I feel things.
And then Becky looks right into the camera and goes, are you psychic? Good. She gives them the most vaguest of warnings about going to this house. Right after they leave, Paul bursts in and he's like, mom, it's me. And she's so happy to see him, but she's really worried about her son because he was supposed to be comatose back at the hospital. But now he's just talking crazy talk. And he says, mom, can I stay with you? Will you make me apple fritters? It's so great. Like, and his voice is weird. I will play that part.
Yeah, I wrote down, I was curious at first if he was dubbed because it's like a little boy voice.
Yeah.
But it's his real voice.
Yeah. Wow.
Paul, what are you doing here?
Hi, Mom. I'm home. I've run away.
I'm working my fingers to the bone to get you well. and you've run away. You're going straight back to the hospital.
I can't go back. I've... Disorderly. He was a bastard. He deserved. I didn't want to do it. I had to.
Oh my God! What have they done to you?
Mom, I want to stay with you.
Let me think.
And you'll fix me apple fritters?
They're renting this old place that's supposedly haunted, and as they're getting ready, or excuse me, as Chris is unpacking, Becky brings her a frickin' Polaroid. It's like, Mom, look at this. And she takes the photo from her stepdaughter and goes, huh, wow, you got yourself a spirit on camera, and hands the picture back to her, and she's like, really? Chris starts hearing strange sounds. And more kooky stuff starts happening, but we're interrupted with yet another clip from Frozen Scream.
It's probably like our last one, right?
I hope so, yes. But this whole hallucination she's having of the film Frozen Scream is she saw this weirdly but not vaguely racist mask hanging from the ceiling. It was so not what I wanted to see in this movie.
Did you say not vaguely racist? Because I would say... Totally vaguely racist.
Yeah, I would say not vaguely, totally. Yes.
Oh, not vaguely. I understand.
Yeah,
I
no,
understand.
It's totally racist. But at least it didn't like conjure up any like racist sequences. It's just more clips of Frozen Scream.
Yeah, but you know what? Just watching the film as we're talking, as I do, yes. I did notice that there were some masks that looked kind of like that in the bric-a-brac store.
Ooh.
So I wonder if that's where they got it from.
Paul, but Paul's been. Swiping from his mom's supply.
You know, it also looks a little bit like one of like a racist version of one of those spitting witches. Remember from I don't remember which movie it was we talked about that had a spitting witch in it. It spit the water out and it cackled.
Oh, that was from the one at the lake, Blood Lake.
Blood Lake. Oh, another shot on video.
You know, the lake with blood in it.
Yeah, the Blood Lake.
I forgot to mention our director, Felix Gerard. He has a really nice picture of himself up on IMDb standing next to a film camera, but this shot on video movie is his only credit.
Yeah, so when did that happen?
Felix, what's going on, buddy?
Wasn't here. I tried searching for him outside of IMDb and I got nothing.
Man, too bad.
Who is this man?
So while Chris is snooping around the house at night, she hears some more sounds, and then she goes into one of the rooms that hasn't been unpacked yet of this haunted house, and she finds a painting of like a really terrible painting of what I think is supposed to be a Native American. And then, of course, the ghastly appearance, ghostly, definitely not ghastly, appearance of our pal Inez looking exactly the same as she did before, trying to give Chris a message, maybe not.
Stink eye or message, hard to say.
The next morning, Chris has more visions. This time she sees a veggie patty, what looks like a veggie patty on a plate that turns into a dead rat. Not a real dead rat, because of course they couldn't afford a real dead rat in this movie, thank God. And then a plate or a teacup in a plate is shattered on the ground and then magically disappears. There's memories of past events are like recurring over and over again, just like a different movie. And meanwhile, I had nowhere to go with that. Paul is lurking more, which is what he likes to do.
He's lurking with his executioner's mask on,
yes,
outside of this house, and he's making a lot of noise. So much so that Chris does hear him and starts saying to him, a potential killer. She's just like, go away. Don't bother me. Go away.
I love this. I love it. Tired. Then, out of nowhere, Eleanor shows up, one of my favorite characters in this movie. Eleanor is Dr. Harper's wife, so Seymour's wife. She just pops in, and they have a very strange conversation. She introduces herself, and she has the blush, the killer frickin' sprayed on blush that all of these women in this movie and some men have. And Lieta, without prompting, looks at the TV and goes, wow, did she get shot with Homer's makeup shotgun? Which is a deep cut. I like that. I'm glad she remembered that. That was very nice. But yeah, Eleanor's super judgy about how they're not done unpacking yet. And she literally says, messy, messy, messy.
But then she also says, I like messy because it makes me feel better about my place.
I'm a slob. She confesses to being a slob. But I was thinking of Frosty the Snowman. Messy, messy, messy. There you go. She asks, like, so how you doing in this house? Is everything okay? And she's like, tell me, is this house haunted? She's like, oh, no, I meant, like, there's, like, bad electrical and shit, dude. And then she's asking her about supernatural stuff, and Eleanor's like, oh, don't let Seymour hear you talking about that shit. Like, I don't know why I didn't expect any cursing to happen in this movie, but when she drops the S word, I was like, what? Like, it shocked me. It was so cute.
Well, everything else is so wholesome.
Yes.
It just so came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Now we cut to a gaggle of one of our favorite things in Hello, This is the Doom Show, in the H exclamation point T-I-T-D-S frickin' dictionary, as quoted by Brad, a bunch of good time Charlies.
They are that. They're not idiots.
No. They're barely funsters.
Yeah.
These kids are at the pool. Or excuse me, this time they're at the hot tub. We'll get to the pool later. We had a lot of pool time. Yeah. But they're all sitting on the same side of the hot tub with their feet in the hot tub just so the camera guy doesn't have to work too hard and get a bunch of setups. And they're excited about I don't get any of these people's names. Is Becky one of the friends?
Yeah, Becky's.
Thank you.
I mean, because that's why they're in the movie. Because otherwise it would make no sense why these teens were just around all the time. Yeah.
I think
Becky's wearing like a cheetah print bikini in this one. There you go. Yeah.
So they want to go to this old haunted house, this haunted place called the McFarland Place. The old McFarland Place.
It's a farm. They describe it as a farm.
And then just as soon as they get started talking about going to the place, they cut to nighttime, and now there's this cool band by the pool, the now legendary Ins and Outs.
So it's the same pool, because it's at their house. They're having like a housewarming.
Is this? Well, I'm curious to know. Is this the same house from frickin' Frozen Scream? Is this Renee Harmon's house? That's what
I was
wondering.
Hoping it was the same house from Boarding House.
Oh shit. It's definitely not that house, but yes, maybe they're in the same neighborhood. Oh my god! Oh boy!
But they have like a Mexican themed bar, or is it Native American themed bar? I'm not sure.
Yes, it is definitely cultural appropriation by this
bar. Freaking... Yes.
Oh boy! But this band, I love this sequence with this band. It's so fun and so like. I was still on the fence about this movie, but as soon as we got to the teenagers and the band, I was sold, boy. Not to show my hand too quickly, but this is when the movie hits its stride. If it ever had one, ever.
Yeah, about 30 minutes in. Yeah.
The band is playing. Seymour is pouring drinks at the tiki bar here. And the band is singing the immortal song, Why Do We Close the Door of Love? Oh, excuse me. Why do we close the door on love? Which makes me think of slamming your privates in a door.
Richard, love is the only feeling we'll ever know.
Well, that's certainly true of you and I.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get some social faux pas at the frickin' party where the lady, the rando lady is like, you're Chris? Alex's wife? I thought he was a bachelor.
We thought you were a myth.
And she almost drops the Inez name, but don't worry, Eleanor will pick up the slack in a little bit. And Paul's mom crashes the party. Again, Celeste, our freaking psychic, confronts Seymour again and is immediately removed from the party. Then Eleanor like just starts spilling the beans about Inez. And then the saddest shit ever, Chris confesses to marrying Alex out of desperation.
Oof.
And because her beauty was fading and she was lonely, and, you know, being rich makes you lonely. So she married him just for the hell of it. And of course, this led to all the horrible shit in her life now. And she says a bold-faced lie. Chris lies on camera. She says, "Come on, Eleanor, I am not a computer."
I mean, all evidence points to the contrary. Yeah. You're correct.
Like, because Eleanor has like all this weird impression of her. Like, I thought you'd be really cold and aloof, and just like, because your shithead husband's been talking shit about you since you've been in the mental asylum. And then the keyboardist, they show the keyboardist of the ins and outs, and this poor dude has the blush on. Oof. He has been hit with Homer's makeup shotgun. He's got his sunglasses on, his hat pulled down, probably trying to pull it down over his face so he won't be recognized. Oh my God, I love this part.
Do we not see a makeup credit in the closing credits?
After all of my joking about the makeup, I forgot to look.
Yeah, we're going to have to look.
I'm hoping that's freaking...
Oh God, just Renee. Add another credit to her list.
Makeup department, Deborah Martell. That sounds like a dodgy name to me.
Yeah, it's fake.
I'm checking to see if she was also in the movie as like one of the teenagers or something.
Would be great too.
She did makeup on Executioner Part 2, so I'll have to go back and watch for the freaking the makeup in that one.
Intriguing.
Yeah. Seymour pulls Eleanor to the side because he kind of overhears the convo between her and Chris, and he's like, "Watch how you talk to that psychotic." And he just like, he basically warns her, like he scares her into silence loudly at a party with other people. Then we cut to him explaining what he and Dr. Alex are up to some random guy who showed up to the tiki bar, and he's threatening him too. And it's like, "Oh, don't worry, Alex is out picking up street people for our test subjects."
Excuse me, they're referred to in a much nicer way. He says, quote unquote, "nice anonymous street people."
Oh boy. Next.
That's respect.
That's respect. Very specific respect. Our good time Charlie's, the party's died down. The band is gone and they're trying to decide what to do. And they decide on a pizza party. And they don't call it ordering pizza. I think they call it a pizza party. And I'm like, how do you do that? And then,
well, buy some pizzas, you get a pool, and then you throw the pizzas in the pool and they float, because that's what pizzas do.
And then you leave.
And then you leave, yeah. You dance as you're leaving.
They ultimately decide to go to the spooky place, to go to the frickin' the old McFarland ranch or farmhouse or whatever farm.
Old McFarland had a ghost.
He drew Spawn. So we see Alex driving around in the night looking for hookers, and he negotiates a good time, quote unquote, with a freaking hooker.
Yeah, you know, they talk a while about what a good time is. They're like, "Define good time, please, sir."
The stopwatch is running, mister.
And I honestly did not learn the answer. I just know it involves not messing up her hair.
Right. That is, yeah, that's imperative. That's the whole plot of Leaving Las Vegas. So.
I thought the plot of that was don't kill yourself with alcohol.
No, I thought that was the goal.
I forgot.
Just do it. Don't get a hooker. The good time Charlies are now sneaking around. And I notice that one of the dudes has the blush on. He totally, it's so, what is going on with his makeup, dude? It's so good.
Do you think it was like, the only way your cheeks will show up on video camera is if they're very red?
I guess.
I think they were trying to compensate.
I didn't say which cheeks.
Oh.
Oh. So one of them says to the other, one of the girls says, "All you ever think about is sex. And this place is spooky." But then Alex, we see Alex kidnapping the hooker, and he stabs her with a needle and brings her back. And the kids are actually there hiding. They're hiding from his headlights as he pulls in to this place, and he's dragging this hooker's corpse, or excuse me, maybe corpse, unconscious dead
excuse
woman.
Excuse you, nice anonymous corpse.
Nice anonymous street corpse.
Yeah.
So he's dragging her, and they don't see that, but that's okay. Because it's the next day. And Chris is cleaning the house while her rocking chair rocks. And she actually says, like, Becky, you better get your ass in here.
You better get your ass in here.
In order to prove to Becky that this chair has been rocking by itself, she stops it before she calls her in the room. And then tells her that it was rocking. And of course, Becky doesn't believe her.
And she also spends a while like describing what she thought she heard. She thought she heard footsteps, the swishing of silk, a robe. I guess a robe. She's very uncertain.
Then she calls Seymour. Like, Becky encourages her to call Seymour to tell her about these hallucinations she's having. And she's like, I don't want to call him. I hate him. And she will tell him that much shortly. But then she agrees. She calls him. Cut to a pool party with our funsters, with our good time Charlies, having fun. No talking about anything they might have seen the night before. Just nothing. And this is where the editing gets weird with this gang of teenagers here. But we, like I said, like I've hinted, we'll get back to that later. Because there's a very wonderful, my brain started to like fall apart. I don't know how it was still together at this point, but yeah.
Yeah.
So then we see Chris and Seymour having a little talk about her paranormal experiences that she's been having. Now, the important part is the kids are having their pool party at the same pool that he and her are trying to have this intense psychological conversation. They're splashing, jumping in the water, having a freaking volleyball tournament or whatever they're doing. And the pool... On the other side of the pool where they're having their talk, the water is completely still, which makes me think this pool is miles long.
I mean, possibly. That's what it looked like during the ins and outs performance.
Oh, my God. So she tells him about how she sensed the silk and the fabrics and stuff. And then she tells him straight up, I despise you and everything you represent. Because she's accusing him and Dr. Alex of these immoral experiments, and that Alex wasn't into this stuff before. You're doing this.
Now, all he cares about is research. He's leaving me for another research.
We cut to Seymour calling Alex from his man cave, and they're talking and they're detailing the gaslighting they've been doing to Chris. With the, they're complimenting each other on the good job they've been doing with the sound effects and the weirdness. And then they start to like compliment each other on the other stuff, like the chair moving and the ghostly apparition. And they're like, I'm not doing that. Are you doing that? I'm not doing that. So maybe they're doing too good of a job. Ooh. Yep. Yep. Then we get a scene of, Paul's mom, Celeste, the psychic, explaining psychic phenomenon to Chris, and it's so important that I didn't write anything down that she said. But that's not important because Paul's creeping.
I mean, that is what he does.
Yeah.
What he do. He creep.
He's creeping around the house while Chris isn't looking or while Chris isn't home, and he takes a bite of a peach, and then from the fridge, he takes a sip of their strawberry crush. And wow. I'm hoping to hell I can find a nice old crush commercial from YouTube. So if I did, I'm putting it right here.
Get ready. Now Crush has 10% real fruit juice and a rainbow of flavors for a taste so real you'll want to peel it.
Peel me a crush, sweet darling. I want a taste that's bigger than real. Peel me a crush with 10% juice. It's a feeling I've just got to feel. Peel it down to the natural juice and a taste that's totally wow. Peel me a crush, you good looking.
And that's when she hears what is probably frickin' Paul snooping around, and she talks herself out of experiencing these sounds. Like, these aren't real. You're not real. This chair doesn't rock.
No. Go away. Don't bother me.
Paul has a huge knife. I guess he takes the knife from the kitchen, and then he hides in the closet. And Inez is, without moving her mouth or doing anything different than what she's done before, she's trying to warn Chris about him, but it's too late. He grabs her, and everything fades to black. And she wakes up with Eleanor standing over her. And then Chris recovers perfectly, and they're in an office of some sort going through papers. And Eleanor is really terrible, once again, at keeping any kind of a secret about anything regarding Inez from Chris. But right when Eleanor leaves, Chris finds Inez's passport, because the story has been that Inez is out of the country. She went to like Sweden or Switzerland or something, but how can she leave the country if she doesn't have her passport?
Her toothbrush is in here too.
Her teeth will be filthy.
There's a couple good things here in this long sequence. Inez kind of like this is the first time that she materializes fully bodily, I think. And she has such weird ghost energy. Like, she holds her arms out straight at her sides like she's a Stretch Armstrong. And there's also one moment that actually made me scream when the camera, which is starting out as just a static shot straight on looking at Chris, just does a Dutch angle. It just like moves from that totally static shot into a Dutch angle. That was horrifying.
Wow, I missed that.
Oh,
I'll look for it.
I'll never forget it.
I'll look for it next time.
Mm-hmm.
Aerobics time. Speaking of, you know, Lucio Fulci's bread and butter from Murder Rock, it's freaking aerobics. Chris and her pal, the lady from the party, who's a total blabbermouth, they're hanging out together, kind of like working out, but not working out. And this lady is, again, running her mouth about Dr. Alex and Inez and just dropping some more bullshit.
I mean, they do literally refer to her as the blabbermouth, aka the local gossip. And yes! Here in this scene, yes! she's wearing a spandex bodysuit, but also a sleeveless t-shirt underneath that just says dance.
Nice.
It's really good. And these big white rectangular earrings and a headband. Oh. She's got a really good look. I like Alice a lot.
Gorgeous. Oh, wait, what was her name?
Alice.
I did not know her name. Thank you, Alice.
Yeah, Alice the Blabbermouth. That's how they introduce her.
Well, she'll be back later for an important part of the story. It cuts to Celeste, Paul's mother, freaking suggesting that they use a Ouija board. And she says Ouija, not Ouija.
Ouija.
She says a Ouija board because they're effective means of communicating with the other side.
She also says, quote unquote, "I always find a Ouija board handy."
Yes. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, Chris confronts her stepdaughter, Becky, about the affair that her husband had with Inez. And Becky decides to walk away, just leaves. She gets upset and just walks away. And then we cut back to the Ouija part.
Yep.
So they inserted this moment, not knowing where else to put it. And then we come right back to the next scene of them using the Ouija board to freaking contact the dead, which is great.
Well, you know, Chekhov's saying, if you show a Ouija board in the third act, you will also use it 5 minutes later in the third act.
And we cut away from this to see that the Good Time Charlies, they're back to sneaking again. And this is when my brain was broken, because I think that all these kids are sneaking to go to the old McFarlane farm again, but it's an extended version of the same scene from earlier. because I think they're all wearing the same outfits.
Yeah. So, well, I imagine they filmed it all on the same day.
Exactly. So why they have the kids sneaking off to the place the first time and almost seeing the hooker dragging maybe they're trying to add tension? I don't know why they had them do this twice. It's blatantly the doesn't make any sense. I love it.
I mean, the editing, I think the whole MO of the editing is just to keep us on our toes.
Yes.
And in that case, it succeeds beautifully. So
that's why they got the awards. They swept the awards that season.
Yep. The People's Choice.
We cut back to the Ouija talking. And now they're trying to contact Julian, Celeste's spirit guide. And they immediately start getting messages from the Ouija board, but they're not waiting for it to spell anything. And they missed an opportunity to really drag out the length of this movie by having them spell the spirit messages from Inez out letter by letter. I'm really glad they didn't. But other than the yes or no, they don't use the Ouija board for anything else. The kids get inside the old McFarlane quote-unquote farm, and they all crowd into a darkened room together, and I just started laughing so hard because it has no atmosphere. You can barely see what's going on. It's clearly every character just stuffed into a room.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The next, 10 minutes or so are oppressively dark. I mean, because
yeah.
We're on video stock here. I mean, it's hard to make this look good on film. Yep. When you have lighting, and I don't think they had that at all.
No, they were depending on street lights coming in from the windows.
Yeah, so it was quite crazy. Dark. You don't see much. Things are just happening.
Yep. And then Eleanor bursts in on Ouija time, and she's like, "Where are the kids?" And they're like, "Oh, they went to that old McFarlane place." Oh no. We cut back to the kids, and the girl reiterates, "This place is spooky." And the dude says, "Oh, you candy ass." And of course, Paul, this whole time, is creeping around, being creepy. And my favorite character, God only knows what this girl's name is the blonde girl in the pigtails,
mm-hmm.
who feels like she's from a different movie, because she acts like she's playing a child. And she says the immortal line, "Wait till I get a hold of those jerks." Because they think that the guys and the other teenagers have abandoned them in this old place. And so they're like, "I'll show them." Meanwhile, there's a couple making out. The dude gets handsy. And she says, "No, I don't want to do this here. No, no, stop it." And when she won't have sex with him, he tells her, "I'll get you for this."
A lot of revenge being sworn in this section of the film.
It's terrible.
Revenge unfulfilled.
Thank God. And then, on the way to the McFarlane place, frickin' Chris is finally, interrogating Eleanor about what she knows about Inez. And she goes, "What happened to Inez?" And Eleanor says, "I'll tell you later."
It's not important.
Oh my God. Oh, that made me laugh. So then inside, Chris sees Inez and she asks her, "What do you want from me?"
And "What do you want, girl? Did Paul get trapped in a well? What are you trying to say?"
Oh my God, is the tractor on fire? Chris is then scared by a fake arm that's hanging from the ceiling in this old farm. It just looks like something you'd see in a shop that special effects people have. It's not even grotesque. It's literally a mold for an arm so you can make copies of it. I don't even know what.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's just a piece of plastic. But the funny part is she yells, "Becky, Celeste, Eleanor, Joe." And I don't know who Joe is. But then she finds the body of the dead hooker. This hooker that he picked up earlier, that Alex picked up earlier, she is hanging from the wall by her neck with a chain around her neck, and there's blood around it. So not so much lobotomized, unless no, that's what...
Murderized.
Murderized. Hey. Yeah. Oh, boy. But then they flip the lights on, and Seymour and Alex are threatening the kids. I don't even think they're even in the McFarlane place. I feel like they're in Chris's house or somewhere, and they're threatening. It's like the next day.
Yeah.
And they're threatening the kids to keep quiet about what they saw. What did they see? What the fuck happened?
Maybe we were in their perspective, so they saw everything that we saw.
Yeah. And then, well, I think the idea was that Alex and Seymour just convinced Chris that she's crazy. She didn't see anything at the old McFarlane farm. So it's just the next day, and Alex is on the phone with Seymour, and he's totally just full on letting his evil hang out. And just, he literally says, "We're going to kill Chris. That's what we're going to do." As Chris is eavesdropping.
And she's like, "Are they talking about me?"
There's a lot of people named Chris in this city.
It can't be. It must be another Chris.
And of course, we find out that the hooker was actually supposed to be getting a lobotomy, but Alex was interrupted, or somebody was interrupted. And then Chris makes her escape. She jumps into her car, and the awesome chase music comes on. And then Dr. Alex is chasing her, and they are exceeding the speed limit, maybe. Like, they're going like 35, dude.
Yeah, I love the synths that accompany this. That's very so good.
Yes. So they pull over at the woods, get out of their cars, and then Alex chases Chris through the woods. And then, my favorite part, Chris gets back in the car and drives off, and then Alex gets back in his car, and then they just leave. And she goes to see Celeste, and she's like, "I'm in trouble." And Celeste is like, "Yo, dog, I'm sorry, but my son is too important to me, so I'm going to be a sellout." Aww. And she totally sells her out to Alex, who's managed to catch up with her.
Damn. That's cold-blooded.
Dude, this is the bottom of page 4. We're rocking my notes.
Yeah.
So now Chris is on the operating
table. On
the operating table. She's about to get lobotomized, presumably. But the best part is Seymour is complaining because in the hospital, the hospital slash apartment building or hotel, whatever this place is.
Renee Harmon's living room.
Yes. He's complaining because of the storm that's brewing outside. It's a nice dark and stormy night. But he says, "I find it difficult to function during an electrical storm."
I feel like they should find it difficult to function because they're in a totally dark room.
Oh my God.
With just one overhead light kind of shining down on Renee's face.
Yep.
That's it.
But then even that goes out and we get two things. We get lasers and we get Inez backlit by lasers.
Yeah. This is Inez's laser light show.
Oh my Lord.
Led Zeppelin is not playing, but I guess it's just because they couldn't afford it.
Nope, they were not. This is not the laser light show at Stone Mountain in Georgia. This is something much different. Then the gore sequence comes.
Yes.
Which is the very, very not flattering wax sculpture of Inez. Begins to melt. They do a quick switch with her face looking very menacingly into the camera, backlit with the red, and they cut real fast to her wax face, which is hideous, and they start melting it with presumably a blow dryer. And
she is melting like a Walmart candle.
Woo! When that skull starts showing up through the freaking thing, and I was like, well, they did this. Like, this was the effects budget, the lasers, and this melty head. I'm so proud of them. Because even if you know it's fake, it's still disgusting to think about how to clean that crap up. Like, you have to hope they had a tarp down. It's so nasty. But there's also, in this sequence, because it's now in pitch black darkness, Alex is supposed to be scared and terrified, but you can't see his face.
No.
Paul is there with a knife.
Is he?
Maybe, but there's definitely a knife that's being reflected in the laser. So it might be Paul. I'm not sure. And then stab, 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 stab. And you have to assume that Dr. Alex has been killed, but we're going to find out in dialogue later that he went insane?
What? Oh, really? I thought everybody died from fright.
Maybe. All I know is that all I could think about when Inez's face was melting is how much I hate fondant icing. I hate that stuff. Ugh. Give me that buttercream icing. Well, I mean, my blood is 80% buttercream, so it's fine.
Buttercream in July.
Oh, yeah. So that should be the name of my album. So then we have Chris and Becky walking through the woods. They're doing that thing where the dialogue starts before they start walking. So it's really unnatural shot. It's so good. And they just freaking explain all kinds of shit that I didn't pay attention to. Yeah. Wrapping up this plot. But more importantly, Paul. Paul is still freaking stalking them.
Still stalking.
He's
actually done nothing but stalk the whole movie.
No. He runs after them and it's a freeze frame. And then the creepy, awesome music starts playing. The closing credits have this really cool theme with a la 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 la. Like creepy ladies going la 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 at the end. Oh, man. Whew. That is
I like the closing bit of wisdom that Chris gives us about something along the lines of like God asking us to live fully each day he gives us. Right before the, Paul the... he is a killer, technically.
Yes.
He just hasn't killed anybody in a while.
Right.
Skipping behind them. It's a nice little bit of irony.
I think somebody says, just look at God's creation around you. That might be one of the lines there. But yeah, that's Night of Terror, folks. Holy shit. The sequel, not sequel to Frozen Scream, you didn't know, you didn't want.
Man, they should have called it Frozen Terror.
Ooh, thawed horror. I don't know.
Slightly chilly. Insane Asylum?
Breezy. What?
There's a character in this movie called Shrimpy. I don't remember that person.
Yeah, that was one of the girls. That was one of the girls, I believe. But Shrimpy. Man. Shrimpy. Maybe that's the name of the hooker.
That's rough.
Hey, you want a good time? Call Shrimpy. So, oh my God, could that have been Inez?
No, that was Chris.
That was Chris. That's very... Do that again with a German accent, honey. She said, how did you know it wasn't?
fair point.
Touche. Or in German, touche. So, Jeffrey, how did you like Night of Terror, 1986.
It definitely grew on me. As I mentioned before, I was kind of just annoyed at the beginning when it kept cutting pretty regularly. I guess it only does it like 3 or 4 times, but it was kind of annoying when it kept cutting totally meaninglessly to Frozen Scream, just because I was enjoying the parts that were not Frozen Scream.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, well, thankfully, it does settle down and becomes its own thing after about the first 30 minutes. So, I like this one quite a bit. It's both a film that is full of incident, but none of the incidents are of any consequence. So it's not one that's an easy recommend for anyone outside of our listenership. So anybody who listens to the show, go watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. How did you feel about this one?
I'm bordering on loving it, right at the edge of loving this. Like, just like you, as soon as it started, I had that bad feeling. Like, is this going to be a thing where every time I pick a shot on video movie for our series that we do, is this going to be another one Jeffrey doesn't enjoy? But as soon as it got over it, the crap, which was the reliance on padding from another film, I really enjoyed this a lot. I mean, I was laughing. I was having a good time. It's one of those ones that, much like the, for lack of a better term, the bread and butter of when you and I do a show, is the details. The details really make these things come alive. And when something is edited this poorly, where even I notice, because I'm dumb. What were they doing with the order of these events? It's so cute. I guess they didn't want any scenes to go on too long, but then it has scenes that go on too long.
Yeah. Well, that's why they edit other scenes in between them, you know?
Yeah.
Keeps things fresh.
And I definitely gave myself something to prepare for this by like in reverse. I watched Things for the first time, which, you know, has a reputation for being a VHS movie, but it was shot on film.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, the production values of that made me appreciate the care and love that went into Night of Terror, even if it was slapdash and horrible. But yeah, I'm glad we covered this one. I don't even know if we're going to do another VHS one. I'm like wondering if you've come up with an idea for what we would do next.
I will definitely think of something. I would like to do another one for sure.
It'll be a surprise, folks.
Yeah, it'll be a surprise.
Even to us, because we don't know yet.
It'll be a good one. Don't worry.
Yay! Well, Jeffrey, thank you for joining me once again.
You're so welcome.
And we're gonna slip into all this VHS mold we got and get that VHS dust in our...
You don't want the mold, though. The mold's like the worst thing.
You can't get rid of it. Yeah.
It like, well, you can, but you got to be careful, and it's really intensive, and it can spread to other ones if you don't take care of it.
Can I give you my advice? Can I give you and the listeners at home my only piece of VHS care and maintenance advice I know?
Are you going to say get rid of them and don't have them?
No. Well, obviously, if you want to like maintain a relationship with someone who doesn't collect VHS. No, this comes from our dearly departed Nafa, who worked in the media center of our library and was very good at repairing VHS tapes and taking them apart and getting them to actually work when all hope seemed lost. When you get a tape that you want to watch or dump to DVD-R, which is the smart thing to do, so you don't have to watch it so often, fast forward to the end and then rewind back to the beginning, and it loosens the tape up. So if the tape has been sitting for many years and hasn't gotten lots of play, then you can freaking loosen it up and should play pretty nicely.
Interesting. Yeah, I've always heard not to rewind them frequently.
I have never... I mean, I've heard that from other people. I definitely rewound my tapes. I know that there's a lot of torque that happens at the end when you rewind or fast forward a tape.
Yeah.
You can hear that shit.
Oh, but, you can. Yep.
But you gotta, I mean, how do you watch it from the beginning if you can't rewind it?
Well, no, I guess it's just like, don't rewind it every time you watch something.
Oh, okay. I get you. Cool.
You know, it's like, so if you're done watching a movie, just leave it at the end wherever you stopped it.
Then you
rewind
it
next time.
There you go. See, look at that. You brought the realness.
Yeah, the realness.
That's it. That's all I got. And folks, thank you for listening. You guys are a big part of why my voice is so amazingly sensual. I don't know. Thank you. Bye.
If you hadn't screwed her, maybe she wouldn't have tried to screw you.
This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.